So our friend Tamara Cherry joins us right now because she's been doing some great work in talking about how crime affects people. Sometimes people in the media who are covering it, of course, from Pickup Communications story today about how many people who are associated with gun violence in this city, Jay, we think of the direct victim of gun violence, and we don't necessarily think of the trauma that gun violence can have on others. People maybe who witness it or who are family members of victims who have perished at the hands of gun violence in our city. There's a movement to do something about that, and that is to have that trauma covered by OHIP, meaning that you'd be able to get some therapy for it if your family was affected by gun violence. And again, Tamara Cherry joins us right now. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, Tamara, this is definitely one of those things that, you know, it's nothing new when it comes to trauma. But what is new is that I think that we're finally starting to recognize that we need to do something about it.
You're so right. It is nothing new when it comes to trauma, Jay. And it is crazy that it has taken this long for us to start talking about covering this from, a public dollars perspective. I'm a big, as anybody who follows me on Twitter knows, I'm a big proponent of taking care of our mental health. And I'm of the mind that everybody's therapy sessions should be covered by, you know, public health. But this is, at the very least, should we not be taking care of the most vulnerable among us? When we talk about gun violence and homicide survivors, as I have quite a bit through my research into the impact of the media on trauma survivors, I mean, homicide survivor is a label that so many families are sentenced to wear through no fault of their own for the rest of their lives. And basically, we just leave them to suffer through that sentence on their own. There are some very minimal supports available in the immediate aftermath, often by way of volunteer victim service providers, because that's how much we care about our trauma survivors, that we don't have adequate funding to actually pay these people. But and then they're offered some counseling sessions. There was one homicide survivor I was chatting with this morning. She told me that she was offered counseling by a psychotherapist through victim services for 10 sessions or 12 months, whichever occurred first. I think anybody that has gone through a traumatic experience and gone through therapy for it would immediately recognize that that is so far from what is necessary.
So, first of all, let's talk about who we're talking about. We're talking about anybody who is tangentially kind of affected by it, meaning I don't have to be there and have been witness or to see the aftermath. I'm just a relative, perhaps, who no longer gets to see my son or daughter or brother or sister. Or who are we talking about?
So I think that first and foremost, we need to be talking about the survivors. And by that, I mean the surviving family members or next of kin who are left behind after people are killed by gun violence. We absolutely need to be taking care of witnesses who see these things. I can't tell you how many times I visited neighborhoods in Toronto that were wrapped in yellow crime scene tape. And just my heart went out to all the kids that are standing outside that tape watching what's going on. And I'm thinking, what's going to happen to these kids when they grow up? They're passing, body after body under a sheet on their way to school, or police tape on a weekly basis. What does that do to somebody's psyche? So we need to be taking care of those kids. And of course, we need to be taking care of the kids that are left behind. I mean, that goes to the homicide survivors too. But I think about all of the sentencing hearings that I have sat through in Toronto for young men who have just been convicted of some horrific crime. And through the sentencing submissions of their defense lawyers, we find out that their family members were victims of homicide or gun violence, or that this had touched them. This is a cyclical issue, just as it is so often with childhood sexual abuse, where, children who are abused or witness abuse when they're younger, the little boys are more likely to grow up and become abusers as adults, and the little girls are more likely to grow up and become victimized. We know all of this from research, but we by and large are not taking care of the most vulnerable among us. So today, here we are talking about this private members bill that has to do with gun violence. I think that this is a great first step. It's one that should have happened a long time ago. It is one that should not be seen as partisan in any way, but it is also one that should go far behind just the plague of gun violence on our society. We should be extending this to survivors of sexual violence, of human trafficking, of you know, the generational trauma caused by residential schools. The list goes on and on. And when you actually start looking into how we take care of the people who are left in the wake of this trauma, whether in the immediate aftermath, whether it's a mother who has literally just witnessed the homicide of her son, or you're talking about the child who's standing outside the police tape wondering what's going on and finding out that, you know, that guy that you would usually see walking on his way to school is now dead. We need to be taking care of these people. And when you realize how little we're doing, it's absolutely abhorrent. And I think that anybody that actually looks into it and finds out would be perhaps driven to call their local MPP or MP and demand more.
When you talk about victims of residential schools and you talk about victims of sexual assault, you talk about victims of gun violence, and we look at, you know, just the resources to try and deal with all of these people, how do we possibly prioritize who needs what and when?
Well, we just had a global pandemic and somehow we found, what, like $1 billion to deal with that right away. So I think when we start treating this as the public health emergency that it is, and not just because there's been a spike in gun violence over the last month or two in Toronto, but because this has been going on for years and years, and because people who survived these things back in the 90s are still suffering today in many circumstances, then we find the money. You know, it might mean going into a little bit more into the red for the foreseeable future, but this is something that is so critically important. And if you want to look at it from a very selfish perspective, then if we want to stop gun violence or, you know, the trigger men of the future from happening, then we need to take care of our children today. We need to take care of the kids that are left behind when young men are shot to death on Toronto streets. We need to take care of their mothers who are left to mother the rest of the children. We need to take better care of each other. And we can't just start caring about it when people are hit by stray bullets.
Yep.
Or when we're shocked by these high numbers.
Could you give us an idea? You've talked about bravely about what the effect of being a crime reporter and seeing all of this stuff has had on you. But typically, how would this manifest itself in a person who has witnessed it and or been tangentially touched by it because they lost a loved one?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in touch with a couple of homicide survivors this morning. I asked for their permission to share their stories. There's one in particular I want to read from a survey response she actually gave me in my research project about the impact of the media. This is a woman named Evelyn Fox in Toronto. Her son, Kissinger Gunn, was killed outside of a Toronto restaurant a few years ago. And when I asked her if there was anything else she'd like people to know about the impact of trauma, she said this: "I wish there was a way to explain what goes on inside your head after your child is killed that people would understand. The feeling of someone literally reaching into your chest and squeezing your heart for months after. The feeling of surrealness and grief is so overwhelming. And for those of us that actually witness the effects of what a bullet has done to their loved ones, our minds feel like they are going to explode. We are not even aware of what is going on around us. It's like you are outside of your body watching yourself. We are going through the motions of the day, but not really aware of what we are doing or saying." And I could tell you guys dozens of stories after dozens of stories just like that. But so many times the Evelyn Foxes among us are just walking around and somewhat anonymous and forgotten because they're not being properly cared for.
Tamara, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tamara.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Mitzi Hunter, the Liberal MPP, is the one behind Private Member Bill, which is 129, to extend OHIP and cover counseling for victims of, just violence, victims of violence. So thank you to Tamara Cherry.